The Senate will please come to order. The clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates.
You ready to go?
Bates. Bonamici. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Burdick. Carter. Carter. Devlin. Devlin. Dingfelder. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Gerard. Hass. Hass. Johnson. Johnson. Cruz. Cruz. Metzger. Metzger. Bonas Anderson. Bonas Anderson. Monroe. Monroe. Morissette. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prozanski. Prozanski. Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney.
A quorum being present, we will post the colors. And Senator Richard Devlin, Senator Richard Devlin will lead us in the pledge, please.
We've got to bring the flag right over here. So if you want to come right here, we've got to bring the flag right over here.
The invocation today is from Chaplain Rajan Zed, who is the president of the Universal Society of Hinduism.
I will read from ancient Hindu scriptures. First I will read in Sanskrit, then in English. Om Bhur Bhuvaha Svaha Tat Savitur Varenayam Bargo Devasya Dimahi Diyo Yona Prachodayat. We meditate on the transcendental glory of the Deity Supreme, who is inside the heart of the earth, inside the life of the sky, and inside the soul of the heaven. May He stimulate and illuminate our minds. Asto ma sadgamya, tamso ma jyotirgamya, mrityor mamratam gamya. Lead me from the unreal to the real. Lead me from darkness to light. Lead me from death to immortality. Niyatam kuru karma, tvam karma, jaho haya karmana, sarira tarapi, chate na prasiddhye the karmana. Yajnartha karmano, nyatra lokoyam karma vandana, tadartham karma, kautenya, mukta sangha, samachara. fulfill all your duties. Action is better than inaction. Even to maintain your body, you are obliged to act. Selfish action imprisons the world. Act selflessly without any thought of personal profit. Tamsada sakta satatam karyam karma samachara asakato haya karmana paramapanoti purusha karma neva hi samsiddhi masita janakadya loka sangraha mevapi sampa syankartu marhasi. Strive constantly to serve the welfare of the world. By devotion to selfless, one attains the supreme goal of life. Do your work with the welfare of others always in mind. Om Saha Navavatu, Saha Navunaktu, Saha Viryan, Karva Vivahi, Tejasvi Nava Dita Mastu, Ma Vidvisa Vahai. May we be protected together, may we be nourished together, may we work together with great vigor. May our study be enlightening, may no obstacle arise between us. Samniva akuti samna hirdyani va samnam astu vomano yathava susahasti. United your resolve, united your hearts, may your spirits be at one, that you may long together dwell in unity and concord. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace, peace be unto all. Om.
I'd like to thank Senator Devlin for leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance, Chaplain Rajan Zed for his invocation. Courtesy of the Senate, recognize Senator Gerard, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to extend courtesies to my mayors that are in the audience. This might be a little tough for you because I got a few of them. So Margaret Scott from Detroit, Mike Higgs from Gates, Karen Clark, who's the acting mayor for Idana, Ken Toombs from Lebanon, Mike Rollo from Lyons, Roel Lundquist from Mill City, Sandra Baggett from Sio, Jerry Abood from Staten, Gene Ditter from Sublimity, Craig Fenneman from Sweet Home, Jim Cripe from Waterloo, James Miro from Aurora, Todd Deaton from Donald, James Yonley from Hubbard, Mike Clark from Malala, Rick Scheidler from Mount Angel, Stu Rasmussen from Silverton, and Ron Bielenberg from Scotts Mills. I expect you to get all those correct, Mr. President. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just going to say right now, I want to extend the courtesy to the mayors that Senator Gerard announced, but also to all the mayors that have come into the state capitol today. To be the mayor of a city of Oregon is an extraordinarily difficult job. It's a tremendous honor, but they are also struggling with budgets and programs and services like we are. And I believe that the nearest and dearest form of all government is local government. And so these men and women who are joined us today in the state capitol, I'd like to welcome each and every one of them to the extent that they're here in the gallery or not in the gallery, because I know they've come to the state capitol today, and it's a privilege and honor that you've come here. So the Oregon State Senate extends the courtesies of the day to each and every mayor of a city that has come here today. Thank you. Senator Johnson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like courtesies of the Senate extended to the Honorable Scott Burge, Mayor of Scappoose. I have two other mayors in the building that I'm aware of today, Mayor Kinsey of Banks and Mayor Shirley Kalkoven of Nehalem. Thank you.
Thank you. Courtesies of the Senate are extended. Senator Jackie Winters, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Please extend courtesies to my intern, Dave Hafner. I have the honor and privilege of probably, usually we have interns who are from our university system. I happen to have an intern who's from the business community who has taken the time and effort to learn what we do in this process. So please extend courtesies to David Hafner.
Thank you, Senator. Dave? Happy to be here. We'd like to extend the courtesy of the Senate to you. We hope you have a good experience. Senator Verger, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, want to welcome the Oregon mayors. Today we have over 50 mayors from across the state representing the Oregon Mayors Association. Among our guests is Depot Mayor Jim White, President-elect of the Oregon Mayors Association from my district. As the former mayor of Coos Bay and president of the League of Oregon Cities, I ask that we all extend a warm welcome to our partners in local government. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, extend the courtesy of the Senate to the mayors. I realize that each individual has mayors here they want to identify, so I've attempted to do that in my initial statements, but if you choose to stand, that is also your right. Senator Devlin, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I believe in the back gallery here I have a class of 50 in the third and fourth grade from the Oak Creek Elementary School in Lake Oswego. Mr. President, if you would extend courtesies to them, it would be most appreciated.
Oak Creek, we're happy you're here. It's always nice to see students in the back gallery, and we hope you have a good day coming to your state capitol. I hope you can come again. Thank you. It's an honor and a privilege to have you here. Go Oak Creek. Thank you. Recognize Senator Frank Morris.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have guests in the building today, Dr. Rita Cavan, president of Lynn Benton Community College, and members of the board. They're in the upper gallery, and I would ask that you extend courtesies to them in their presence in the building today. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to extend a courtesy to the Oregon Senate to the representatives here from Lynn Benton, one of our 17 community colleges. It's a great community college. I've been there many times, so thank you, Senator Frank Morris, and hope you'll stay with us throughout the day. It's an honor and a privilege that you've come to your state capitol. I hope you like the way it looks. Thank you. Are there further courtesies? Remonstrances. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, one of the good representatives is bringing the Oregon timeline to you, and last week I brought up a date to you. Since we're not here for the remainder of the week in floor session, 1934, on January 30th, 1934, the Gold Reserve Act was passed. And for those of you who don't know what the Gold Reserve Act was, is it allowed the U.S. Treasury to seize all the gold held by the Federal Reserve, and it made it illegal for individual citizens to possess gold in the United States. I'd also like to point out to you, Children's First Day was a couple of days ago, and they gave a book to us all and asked us to read through it. Something that jumped up as of interest to me is the subprime loan statistics in this book. As example, in Clackamas County, 24% or 23.4% of loans are subprime loans. In Clatsop County down on the coast, 22% of all loans are subprime loans. In Coos County, 27.8% are subprime loans. In Crook County, 30% of all loans are subprime loans. In Douglas County, 26.3% of all loans are subprime loans. 18.9% in Hood River County are subprime loans. Lane County is 25% subprime loans. 22.9% in Lincoln County. 31% in Linn County are subprime loans. 30.7% in Marion County are subprime loans. Multnomah County, 25.4% of those loans are subprime. Umatilla, 31%. Washington County, 22%. And that's how we got to where we are today. So the free fall continues. Thank you, Mr. President.
Recognize Senator Farioli.
Mr. President, thank you, Mr. President. I have the sesquicentennial minute to share with the members. Mr. President, January 28, 2009 is National Book Month. This sesquicentennial history minute is from the Oregon Historical Society's online educational resource, the Oregon History Project, and the Oregon Time Web. Today, our sesquicentennial minute is about Ken Kesey, Oregon author, who lived from 1935 to 2001. Ken Kesey was one of Oregon's most critically acclaimed and controversial authors. He published One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in 1962 and the quintessential Oregon novel Sometimes a Great Notion in 1964. Both novels explore what Kesey saw as the conflict between modern industrial society and the individual, a struggle between conformity and freedom. Kesey was born September 17, 1935 in La Junta, Colorado. He and his family moved to Springfield, Oregon in 1946. He earned a bachelor's degree from the University of Oregon School of Journalism in 1957 and attended Stanford University's creative writing program, where he studied with Wallace Stegner. Considered a founding father of the 1960s counterculture, Kesey and a group known as the Merry Pranksters traveled throughout the country in a Day-Glo school bus named Further. The Pranksters were the inspiration for Tom Wolfe's book, The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, published in 1968. In 1965, after a short stint in jail for drug use, Kesey moved to a farm near Eugene to raise his family. In 1975, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest became an Oscar-winning film, and Kesey briefly worked as a professor of writing at the University of Oregon. His third novel, Sailor Song, was published in 1992. Kesey lived in Pleasant Hill, Oregon, until his death, November 10, 2001, and remains one of Oregon's stellar contributions to American literature. And Mr. President, that concludes our sesquicentennial minute for today.
Mr. President, I'm directed by the governor to inform you that he has approved and signed the following bill, Senate Bill 339. Mr. President, I'm directed by the speaker to inform you that he has signed Senate Bill 339 and SCR 2.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I move that Senate Bill 338 and Senate Bill 5562 be taken from their places on today's third reading calendar and be made a special order of business at the head of the Senate third reading calendar. Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, moving these two bills ahead, I think, will help us expeditiously address the business before the Senate today.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 4, in memoriam, Hank Collins, 1951 through 2008. Senate Joint Memorial 5, urging Congress to enact legislation creating an Office of the National Nurse. Senate Joint Resolution 12, proposed amendment to Oregon Constitution related to voter registration. Senate Joint Resolution 13, proposed amendment to Oregon Constitution related to surplus corporate income or excise tax revenue. Senate Bill 381, relating to health benefit plans. Senate Bill 382, relating to compensation for log haulers. Senate Bill 383, relating to home care workers. Senate Bill 384, relating to a review board for public contracts with the Department of Transportation, appropriate money, and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 385, relating to treatment services. Senate Bill 386, relating to debt collection practices and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 387, relating to smoking in a motor vehicle. Senate Bill 388, relating to medical marijuana. Senate Bill 389, relating to criminal sentencing. Senate Bill 390, relating to verification of lawful presence in the United States for public assistance applicants. Senate Bill 391, relating to exotic animals. Senate Bill 392, relating to taxation. Senate Bill 394, related to property tax rule and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 395, related to personal property tax delinquency warrants and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 396, related to local government real estate transfer taxes and prescribing an effective date.
These are transmitted to the President's desk for referral. The second reading of Senate measures, please.
Senate Bill 54, related to certified statements of payroll records for public works. Senate Bill 97, related to loan cancellation life insurance. Senate Bill 235, related to small estates. Senate Bill 237, related to powers of attorney.
These are passed to the calendar. We will now proceed to the special order of business. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 338, relating to state financial administration and property money in a court emergency.
Okay. I recognize Senator Nelson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 338 is starting us off in the session with a kind of unique situation. We usually wait to the end of session before we have these type of bills where we have some disagreement amongst the body, and I think we need to have respect for each other in this. There's things in this bill to love, and there's things in this bill to hate. I'm in support of this bill just because I believe it does some very good things for my district and creates some jobs. But what Senate Bill 338 does establishes the expenditure limitation needed for the economic stimulus package. A total of 11 state agencies are included in the package, as well as all 17 community colleges. The project includes nearly $176.3 million of all funds and $9.7 million in additional funds from the community colleges. There are projects in all 36 counties. The package funds deferred maintenance, renovation, and construction projects that are meant to stimulate Oregon's economy through job creation and retention throughout the state as quickly as possible. In order to help expedite the impacts of these projects, the Joint Committee on Ways and Means supports the proclamation of an emergency declaration by the Director of the Department of Administrative Services for the procurement of projects and services needed for these projects within existing statutory authority. Even though an emergency declaration will allow for quicker implementation of these projects, the intent is to retain a fair and legal process. The Department of Administrative Services will provide oversight of the implementation of the projects, as well as ongoing reporting on the status of the projects back to the legislature. Emphasis should be made on using local Oregon companies, employees, and products whenever possible. The use of minority, women, and emerging small business should also occur to the greatest extent practicable. The Department of Administrative Services will begin reporting to the legislature by May 1st of 2009. The report will include, but is not limited to, information on each project status, number of employees hired and retained, the extent Oregon products and services were used, and any cost savings related to energy efficiency. The complete list of reporting requirements, as well as the full narrative of the budget note, is included in the budget report for Senate Bill 338. It is expected that the results of the reports will be represented, will be presented to the appropriate committees during the budget hearings for all the agencies involved. And what I'd like to indicate to the body is, you know, this is just sort of a portion of the larger problem that we have. We're in a serious budget deficit. And as co-chair Mark Ricardo said, if I had an opportunity to have the microphone in my hand, I should get my message out. The underlying problem we have here is that we don't have a sufficient revenue stream to pay for our public services. The taxpayer is not willing to pay anything more in money. If you look around at other states that have surpluses, they're maybe not in as bad a situation as we are in, they supplement their revenue income from royalty income from the use of natural resources. To me, that's the underlying problem. I mean, we're going to make a vote today on an emergency plan, but the underlying problem is, how are we going to fund these public services without going to the taxpayers for more taxpayer money? Oregon, Washington, and California between them probably have a deficit of some $50 billion. $50 billion. They rely solely upon a tax system. The states of Alaska, Montana, Wyoming, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas are all in very good, maybe not good situations, but they're not as bad situations as we're in. They have an alternate stream of income coming from royalty income from natural resources. So what we're going to have to do is change the fundamental way we're doing business in this state and look at some other sources so we don't have to go to the taxpayer, because I don't think we want that fight in this building. So with that, the Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 338 as amended, and I'm a co-carrier with the good Senator, co-chair, Margaret Carter.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Gerard, please.
To the bill, Mr. President?
Please, to the bill.
Colleagues, I voted no, and I'll be a no vote on the floor, and I'd like to kind of go over some of the reasons that I'll be a no. The first thing is, this bill includes maintenance, which is not normally included, and I want to read a summary from the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission. The commission, and this is a quote from the commission, The commission emphasizes that while the state has the capacity to issue general fund lottery revenue and net tax-supported debt as detailed below, such issuance has budgetary obligations that extend for significant periods in the future. Increases in monies used to pay general fund, lottery, and net tax-supported debt services could result in a reduction of funding for other state-supported programs and projects. So I want to make it very clear that I support capital cost improvement programs, but by adding maintenance, this is going to be a way to get around normal means to have a balanced budget. So this is a small step for the legislature, a large step for deficit spending. Number two, we have to deal with bond ratings, and I think bond ratings are going to be very important. Now, some people will argue that as a state, we're not as bad off as some other states, but that really isn't very sound thinking because, first of all, our bond rating is only a AA and not a AAA. And if we continue to borrow and spend, we risk the problem of having our bond rating drop to a single A or worse, which would cost us tens of millions or more. The third thing is that we have to look at multipliers. As someone that's had a little bit of economics, private sector multipliers are almost always higher than public sector multipliers. And therefore, when we're talking jobs that were going to be created, you have to subtract from that the jobs that are going to be taken away from the private sector. Another reason is that the U.S. and the feds are going to have a bailout package that's going to be coming to us, and we have not coordinated our capital cost improvements with their list. And another reason is you have to worry that we're in violation of federal trade laws, that we're saying that we're going to give preference to Oregon businesses. Well, I don't think that we can do that. Now, some people will argue that, but I just don't think that we can. And finally, I'd like to say for myself that if we want to raise $176 million to bond for capital improvement projects at this time when we don't have the money to finance the next 6 months, I mean, we're talking that we're $100 billion down there, or $1 billion down there and $2 billion down for the next biennium, then we have to look at other places to cut. And we have one boondoggle going out in February, which is Owen, that is going to be financed at $270 million. If we were to discontinue Owen, then I think this would give this a lot more credence. For those reasons, Mr. President, I'll be a no vote.
Thank you. I recognize Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I don't think it should come as any surprise that we're having a debate over this issue. If you've been following your C-SPAN, you know that the same debate is raging in Washington, D.C., and one of the probably the most interesting aspects of the discussion is what is economic development? You know, what constitutes something that represents a real investment that pays a dividend? So we're having this discussion in other places. It's a good discussion to have. One of my staff pointed out that this seems to me like, it seemed to him like a MasterCard commercial, where, you know, you get this demonstration of what's out there, and one of the things is installing new lights in a freezer facility. Cost $100,000. Removing juniper bushes from a field out in eastern Oregon. Cost $50,000. Refurbishing cattle guards in Harney County. I don't even know how you refurbish a cattle guard. You know, they're a steel insert you stick in the ground to keep cows on one side. They look like parallel railroad tracks set in sequence. I don't know how you refurbish them. Maybe you dab on a little spray paint. Cost $15,000. Taxpayers still paying for those projects 20 years later. Priceless. I don't agree with my staff person. I think this is more like, in the immortal words of Wimpy from the Popeye cartoon, I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. And so here's what we're out into. We didn't know about this project prior to coming into the legislative session. This was sprung on members of the legislative session last Tuesday. We didn't get the list of the projects until last Wednesday. No amendments were allowed to be considered in Ways and Means. It is what it is. Take it or leave it. And colleagues, you know, there's been an attempt, at least we've talked about cooperation, like we do every legislative session, at the beginning anyway. We've talked about reaching out to each other. Republicans have made some proposals that we think are actually very helpful in terms of job creation. They do not have to do with borrowing and spending. They do not have to do with borrowing for projects that are routine maintenance projects that should have been elements that we held the state agencies accountable for. You know, we're looking at projects, we're calling them job creation stimulus projects, but in point of fact, if we'd been doing our jobs in here and holding the agencies accountable, we wouldn't have deferred maintenance. You know, but in tough times, we allowed the agencies to prioritize. Many of the agency heads have told us flat out, if we weren't being told we had to do these projects, we wouldn't do these projects. Others have come to me and said, for gosh sakes, please don't vote for this project in lieu of other needful things that we want to come to you with later. You know, don't make this the only thing you do, because it really won't help us. Mr. President, I don't know why we're in such a rush. We don't know what the federal stimulus package looks like. They're still debating it in Washington, D.C. Many of these projects are going to go out to the institutions, and they'll have to be conducted as Little Davis Bacon projects, because there's a direct tie to state government. And I don't care how you feel about Little Bacon Davis projects, whether you think they offer opportunity for greater income for contractors or simply limit the number of people who can participate. You know, I don't care about what your opinion is about the Little Bacon Davis program. What I care about is a lot of the contractors in rural communities can't compete because they're not certified. So if anybody thinks this is job creation, well, some of these projects do represent real investments in real projects that will create jobs, and they are appropriate long-term investments. And I think it's important for us to make clear, we don't oppose, at least I do not oppose, that sort of investment. Those things are, if they're well considered and well thought out, we ought to do them. Typically, we do them in May or June, not within 2 weeks of walking in the door. And believe me, we're going to reconsider capital investment at the end of the legislative session, as we always do. So the question occurs to me, why are we including moss removal and the painting of siding in places, I guess, where they wouldn't necessarily have had any project at all if it weren't for these projects? And why are we asking Oregon taxpayers to pay for those for the next 20 years? I don't believe this is going to stimulate the economy so much as it's going to cost taxpayers and cost us credibility with Oregonians. You know, I think this rush to judgment on economic stimulus just looks like panic to me. And Oregonians don't need panic. They need us to be thoughtful, wise stewards. Mr. President, I guess you may have gathered by now, I'll vote no on the bill. Thank you.
Rebecca. Right. Senator Wooden, Senator Times. Yes. Senator Telfer, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to address the bill.
Speak, please do.
I want to first say how proud I am to be a senator here today in a body of individuals, every single one of us, who is very concerned with the pain, agony, and suffering that our fellow Oregonians are going through as they are unemployed, facing unemployment. These are people who have worked hard to support their families and put food on the table, and now that is in jeopardy. I am a bit dismayed, though, in that as a freshman senator, I guess I had high hopes that my input was not considered, was not asked for, was kind of shut out. And as Senator Farrelly only mentioned, I saw the bill last Tuesday, 8 days ago, saw the list on Wednesday, went through the list, saw some carrots thrown in my district, some very valuable projects, particularly Central Oregon Community College, that has seen a 30% increase in enrollment this year and could use six more classrooms and some of the other things in that package. But I've got to honor the voters in my district, the voters who put me here to bring common sense and as a CPA to use my skills and bring fiscal sanity to the state budget. And unfortunately, I don't see that in this debt, this bonding. I do have another proposal that I believe won't cost the taxpayers of Oregon anything. It's what we call leveraging. It will bring in, and I'll give you an example, it will bring in outside money, which is new money, not recycled Oregon money. I believe it will create more jobs and more long-term jobs that are sustainable to economic development in the state. There are 16 airports in this state that have projects to the tune of about $275 million, and I'll give you an example of just one of those. They qualify for a 95% match from the federal government. So, the Redmond Airport in my district needs $400,000 to get the $8 million that the federal government has already allowed them to receive. It's on the AIP list. It's ready to go. This is a 5 cents on the dollar expenditure to bring in new money. And when you start talking about $275 million of this type of money throughout the state, 16 airports all over the state, I think that's a better proposal. And so, Mr. President and fellow senators, I will be voting no on this bill.
Thank you, Senator Telfer. I recognize Senator Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the measure. Colleagues, I have a great deal of frustration, specifically in the process, because there was no input allowed by members of this body. The timeline was incredibly short. And I think some of the decisions that were made could have been made better if we had allowed input from the members. Because, believe it or not, some of us actually have decent ideas. Now, having said that, my community college president, one of them, is in the upper gallery, and he would love to get this $4 million. And I don't blame him. And would he put it to good use? Absolutely. Would it employ some people? Absolutely. For the period of time of doing the deferred maintenance, then those jobs go away. My real concern with Umpqua Community College at this point in time is that they have a true capital project that made the governor's shortlist. And it's an allied health facility at the college, which is absolutely vital. My real question here, and we don't know the answer to it, is with our revenue stream going down and our bond rating uncertain in the future, is doing this now putting in jeopardy our bonding package at the end of this session? And I don't think anybody can answer that, and that's unfortunate. Because there will be some very valuable, very critical needs that may or may not be addressed depending upon how revenue and other factors play into this. You know, our bond rating is not necessarily independent of other things that go on in the country. And when you look at the state that California is in and a few other states, it could get very interesting before all is said and done. But, you know, I suppose if the first two pages of this package we got that were community colleges and OUS, if that had been it, I might have been okay. But it's the rest of this. This is economic stimulus. Okay. ODOT, in this package, has 61 projects that will be in duration from 1 to 5 days. 39 projects that are in duration from 6 to 7 days. You know, colleagues, there's no way a good manager is going to outsource that sort of work. So that's all in-house stuff. How in the world is that economic stimulation? Now, if we had been allowed to have input into this, I received a few days ago a list of potential projects from the League of Oregon Cities. Okay, in that list, in my district, were a lot of sewer and water projects that are desperately needed in some really small communities without the revenue to actually do the projects, and they are currently under some heavy-handed direction from the Department of Environmental Quality. There's no coordination in this. We've got one state agency that is requiring of communities that don't have the resources certain actions, and here we are with the opportunity potentially to offer some assistance in a package that truly would be economic stimulation, because infrastructure needs fit into that category. But were we allowed to have that discussion? No, we were not allowed to have the discussion. Colleagues, I can't think of any reason this has to be done today. I can't think of a single reason. I can't think of a reason where, even if this is all valid, waiting a couple weeks or allowing the body to opine and make suggestions into the makeup of the list is going to hurt us in the long run. This is not economic stimulation, folks. This is make work. Okay? This is form over substance to a large degree. I fear for our ability to get out of this biennium, because now we aren't even focusing on getting out of this biennium. I fear for our ability to move forward with any stimulus packages in the future, because we're doing this now. There are just so many questions here and so many that aren't unanswered that the timing's wrong. I urge a no vote.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Recognize Senator Boquist, please.
To the bill, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, every member in this body wants to help Oregon citizens. And every one of us want to create an atmosphere of hope out in the citizenry. And yes, every one of us wants to act quickly. And as the new member, I always got told this was the deliberative body, not the House. Let's pause and reflect for a moment on what our options are. And first is, what is the problem? I think we all know, out in our districts, all 30 of them, the right term is massive unemployment. Now, we can look at the state books and say, I got 9.1% in this county, or 10 point this, and so on and so forth. But the reality is those are statistical numbers, and they don't count the true unemployed. The real unemployment rate, it's probably 14% in the state, so we have a huge problem. We have collapsing financial markets that are drying up lines of credit for our small businesses, and that's who's laying people off out on the streets. I'd like to take a minute and remind you of three other options. And I've already heard one of the other members say, well, it's not either or. Okay, I'll address that at the end. It's not either or. Here's one option that's been already thrown out on the table. We could declare an emergency and fast-track $1 billion in already approved capital construction projects that we, except for Chris, that we prioritized, vetted, and approved in the last legislature. Now, If you use the same analogy, that creates 15,000 long-term jobs, not 3,000. That's something we've already done and something we could do now. I ask myself, if an emergency fast track is good for this bill, then why isn't it good for $1 billion in capital construction projects sitting in the Treasurer's office? Here's the second option. Let's adjust the income tax withholdings in a revenue neutral, let me say again, revenue neutral manner, and put $100 million or $150 million into the working families of this state to help them pay for milk, bread, meat, heat, and rent. And at the same time, according to our own offices downstairs, this would create 2,453 to 3,678 private sector jobs without borrowing, without taxing, without cutting taxes, though I'm in favor of that too. Here's a third option. In a bipartisan manner, we could sit down and identify within the existing $48 billion all-funds budget that we adopted for this abandonment, except for the good senator in front of me, and look at that budget and compare that to the governor's own documents that I've looked at and I've asked questions about and I'm still waiting for information on. And that says there's $1 billion, maybe several billion dollars, or multiple billions of dollars in other funds out there that we don't know about. Now, I know every member of this chamber believes they're doing the right thing. I fault none. Sometimes we need to step back and think about what do others think about us? How are we perceived regardless of our intentions? Congress's approval rating is in the toilet. I don't think we're fooling anybody. Ours is close. The world runs on perceptions, not reality. We need to ask ourselves, how do our citizens perceive us? And I don't mean the voters that reelect us. I mean every man, woman, and child in our districts, because they're not all registered. In closing, I'm open for discussions. I'm open to options. I'm even open to taking some of these projects and putting it into bonding sale and putting them out in the street. But I'm also conscious that we need to be deliberative and we need to think about what Oregon thinks of us. Sometimes we need to unfavor our districts for the betterment of the state. So let us be deliberative. Let's think about and come up with a better plan. Let's slow it down, take a week or two, and come up with a comprehensive plan. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Atkinson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill. Mr. President, we should not swipe a credit card to make payroll. And that's what this bill seeks to do. I find this bill to be very, very sad. Sad not because of what we're trying to do for higher education, but sad for the next 20 years. My son will be paying for such things in my district as sealing cracks in the wall of a carpenter shop. The job is lit for $1,000, has a completion date that takes 30 days. The problem with that particular thing, that particular job, that particular deferred maintenance is that no contractor, handyman, guy with one truck doing the job himself in my district can get that job. He's not prepared to go through the paperwork of Davis-Bacon laws so that he can get the job for $1,000 that'll take 30 days to fix a hole in the wall that we're bonding our children for the next 20 years for. He can't get that job. But this is being called an economic stimulus package. It's an economic stimulus package if your shop is big enough to handle the government paperwork to do the job. On Soda Mountain, you'll get the microwave tower. The building needs to have the roof fixed. In Notai, there's a way station that needs new rain gutters. $131,000 for new carpet. That new carpet in my district for $131,000, by the time we pay this bond off, will be out of fashion and worn out again. Here's what's not happening in this bill, Mr. President. We're not fixing transportation or roads. We're not fixing rural schools, Fish Passage, libraries in my district that are being shut down, ONC counties that are losing their sheriff patrol. We're not bonding for that. We're bonding for rain gutters. Rain gutters. I have a small school district. It's the Rogue River School District. And we used to have a principal there named Principal Orr. He's since retired, which I don't blame him. It was a school district that every year tried to do the right thing, and this body every year would pass the K-12 budget last and just left these poor school districts guessing and guessing. Well, that school needed to be painted. And you know what he did on his own because he loved the school? He paid for the paint himself, took his two-week leave, and painted the Rogue River High School himself. You know what? There's no help here for Rogue River High School in this bill. There's no way that a handyman or a contractor or a small business in my district can get the economic stimulus that this does promise us. The problem with it is deferred maintenance. And if it were a priority, they would have already done it, they being the government. This isn't even a priority for the state agencies that we're trying to fix. In fact, in one of the earlier drafts of the governor's budget, he was going to add 1,900 new jobs, 1,900 brand new positions in state government, and didn't do anything for this list. Apparently, one of his earlier drafts had the money, and now, apparently, the draft no longer has the jobs, and we need to build rain gutters. Here's the part about it, though, Mr. President, why I am going to have to vote no. I'll be real honest. There's a big old list here, and yes, it's true that one side of the aisle, even after our big love-in, we didn't have any input on it, and that's fine. I understand. I understand standing in front of trains and loaded guns all too well. But the problem with this particular bill is that if one of these projects, just one on this big list, turns out to be a farce, turns out to be a waste, turns out to cost five times more than it would in the real world, turns out to be a complete disaster, this body looks like it just built the bridge to nowhere. That is the problem. Protecting the integrity of the Oregon State Senate to do the correct thing at the correct time with discretion is why we should be voting no on this bill and holding it back. We should make sure that we're not bonding for rain gutters and carpet. We should be bonding for things that last. When one of these things, when the brand new rain gutters in No-Tie get shut down, this will be the bridge to nowhere.
Recognize Senator Starr, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise today to oppose Senate Bill 338. I understand and applaud, quite honestly, support the motivation that brought this bill to the Senate floor today. Unfortunately, this bill is flawed. You know, we could have had a stimulus bill on the Senate floor today that would have generated enthusiastic bipartisan support. Instead, we have one, I think, that we should be embarrassed to present to the working families of Oregon. We could have had a stimulus bill on the Senate floor today that not only creates short-term jobs to put Oregonians to work, and we know that we have a lot of Oregonians that are hurting. We know that. But we could have done not only that short-term piece, but we could have put together a stimulus package that creates a foundation for long-term economic recovery. This bill doesn't do that. In fact, it does quite the opposite. There are no long-term benefits to many of the projects that are in this bill. You've heard some of my colleagues talk about some of them. The list is long and quite honestly embarrassing. Projects with no long-term economic benefit, none. And my yet-to-be-born grandchildren are going to pay the bill for those projects. Let me just talk about one particular project, the only project that's in my legislative district. It's a project for the Oregon Military Department at the Hillsborough Armory. The project proposes to spend $25,000 for unit storage interior remodel. Fancy language for $25,000 for new shelving. Unfortunately, nobody talked to the leadership in Washington County, who for the last 2 years has been negotiating with the Armory, with the military department, the sale and relocation of this armory as part of a major redevelopment of the Washington County Fairgrounds. It's gone, this process, the negotiation has gone to the point where they've shared appraisals. Each side has gotten an appraisal for the building. So my colleagues, my friends, we're going to spend $25,000 borrowed money that, again, my yet-to-be-born grandkids are going to pay for a building that very likely will not exist a year or two from now. That is a clear example of the flawed process that brought us to where we are today. Missed opportunities. Opportunity lost. How many of the projects that are in this list are similarly situated to the project in my district in Hillsborough? Colleagues, there's a lot of expertise in this chamber. We've worked with each other across the aisle, Republicans and Democrats. We've got members that sit on committees and boards and commissions that oversee economic development and infrastructure. Was that expertise consulted, included, collaborated with at all in the development of the list of these projects that we see in Senate Bill 338? This is not a Democrat or Republican issue. This is an issue in developing the smartest, best list of projects to put Oregonians to work, not just for the short term, and we recognize there's a short-term need, but for the long term, that long-term economic recovery that we know is going to come to our state and to our nation. Missed opportunity. Opportunity lost. One final point, Mr. President. We do have an example of a political leader who has reached across the aisle. President Obama, in the creation of the federal stimulus package, called a timeout and said, all right, everybody, primarily to the Democrats in Congress, said, no, we're going to include the Republicans. We're going to include the Republicans, the minority in this process. We've seen the news coverage of the Republican leader Boehner and Mitch McConnell working together with the president to put together a bipartisan package. Why do you think there's tax cuts in the federal package? It's not by accident. Unfortunately, we saw no such effort here in Oregon. There was no effort to vet the project, no effort to include the minority, no effort to include the expertise that's sitting on this chamber, the Senate floor. Why am I passionate about this, colleagues? I'm passionate because the treasure of Oregon taxpayers is the Oregon taxpayer money is a treasure, and we shouldn't waste it. We should give it the value and the respect that it deserves. We as the representatives of the people are walking a thin ice with Oregonians. As they are watching what we're doing with their treasure.
Would someone yield their time?
Colleagues, I'd urge a no vote on this bill. It's bad public policy, and it's hurting our image with the public. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Larry George, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill.
To the bill.
I raced back here this morning. I was at the Northwest Ag Show, and I was telling them a little bit about why I had to leave early, and I started telling them about this bill, and they made me promise that I would ask Senator Farioli if his cattle guards were on PERS. And man, only the people from Central Oregon thought that was funny. The other thing is that they wanted me to ask about the $500,000 that is being spent on the Oregon coast for a fish toilet at the aquarium. And they all got a big kick out of the fact that we'd spend $500,000 when they know that their small towns and communities are actually hurting for real sewer systems. But that's what happens when a program is put together in a haphazard way. We could sit and make fun of this list of projects, and many of us have privately and off the floor. But I want to talk about something considerably more serious. And what's more serious is that what is our role as state senators? Our role as state senators is not to our district. Our role is to the future of this state. I know most of you, and I know that down deep you know that and believe that, and I share that in you, so I don't question anybody's integrity or question anybody's motives, but I want you to think back at the core value, the core reason you're here. I look at the bill, and I know that the Oregon Constitution prohibits deficit spending. I've read the letter from legislative counsel where they tried to explain that fits in the bond definition of bonding. I still think we have serious constitutional issues about deficit spending. When you are paying for current expenses with 20-year bonds, you have a constitutional problem of deficit spending. And I'm going to follow up further with legislative counsel, because I think that a group of taxpayer advocates could come through and file a suit against this and have a very legitimate claim that we are paying for current services with long-term bonding, which I think, if it isn't absolutely constitutional when it gets up to the Supreme Court, it at least violates the intent of the Constitution of the state of Oregon. But probably the most important thing is that I look at this as a business owner. I serve on transportation, and I know that the good senator from Welch's and good senator from Hillsborough are working with all of us on the committee to try to come up with some long-term financing for some of our most important transportation projects. I understand the role of bonding to pay for capital projects in this state. I understand it's a valuable tool to us. But I know as a business owner that every single time I take out a loan to buy a new piece of equipment, that I have to really in my gut decide whether that's the right expenditure for the future of my company. And I do that because I know that if I make the wrong expenditure, I'm the one that has to pay the price. And somehow on this piece of legislation, what we're saying is that we can spend this on short-term projects that we know are current expenses. We can bond this for 20 years. And the beautiful thing about it is it's not until 10 legislatures later that are dealing with this. For the next 10 legislatures, they're going to have to deal with this. Now think about that. How irresponsible is that? I know that this body has great intentions for this state. But when you really are off this floor and you're not worried about the politics and you look at the list and you know what we're trying to do with transportation and other infrastructure in this state, is this really the bill that we want to launch this session off with? Is this what we hoped for when we sat down and said that we're going to try to build a better state within this economy? Is this really what we are trying to do? And I think that every one of us on this floor knows that we can do better. I know that some of you in your specific districts are getting some great benefits, and they're probably needed projects. But the fact is that the priority for the state of Oregon? And I will tell you that in reviewing this, I understand that there are going to be holes that are going to be plugged. But ask yourself this question. These things on this list, do they meet your own gut check of a 20-year bond that the next 20 years, your children and grandchildren are going to have to pay? Or are there other priorities that we need even more? I urge no vote. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Frank Morris, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill. Mr. President, I applaud your desire to do what you believe to be in the best interest of our state. However, I must respectfully disagree with what we are doing today. As laudable as the intent of this legislation is, it clearly is, in my judgment, not in the best interests of Oregon, and I emphasize all of its citizens, and I'd like to explain. That America is in a financial crisis unparalleled in our nation's history is not in dispute. What is now disputed is the length and depth of the crisis and whether we can borrow our way out of this mess. The federal government largely has no choice but to stabilize the financial markets and try to stimulate the economy, all by the means of debt. The question before us today is, what path will the Oregon legislature take? Will we follow in the same path as the federal government and borrow to create jobs? In the face of a free-falling economy with literally no bottom in sight, do we borrow $180 million today and much more tomorrow? Do we borrow to the $1.5 billion limit set by the Debt Policy Advisory Commission? Colleagues, before we jump off this financial cliff, we should remind ourselves why we have historically been very circumspect about increasing debt. Why have we always crafted the capital budget at the end of session? Before we make these decisions, I believe we need to test any amounts of borrowing against solid financial principles. The framework for increasing debt must be much more than a short-term stimulus for the sole purpose of creating jobs, no matter how important that goal may be. What is the return on capital? Has this been considered? To the largest extent possible, we should focus on capitalizing those projects that are either mandated by the federal government, for example, a state mental hospital and emergency preparedness, or are enterprise-related, such as higher education and community colleges, and we're doing that. But replacing lighting fixtures at the Central Distribution Center in Salem for $475,000 hardly qualifies as a strategic investment. Nor does parking for fishermen, nor do heat pumps for ODF&W residences, nor does crack ceiling in walls in a forestry carpentry building. A second principle. What are our greatest priorities? Has this principle been considered? What is our priority today? Is it to create a very short-term economic stimulus by throwing money around for low-priority projects, or is it to create long-term strategic value? Colleagues, at the end of the day, with everything that's in this bill, I sincerely believe that we will not have increased the trust of discerning Oregonians if we pass the bill. A third principle. What is the risk that debt service will erode future revenues that are needed for critical services? Has this been considered? And colleagues, of all the criteria we should consider, this is the most troublesome for me. We are without question in uncharted territory with highly uncertain outcomes, all of which compound risk. Just think, unprecedented in the memory of those who have a very long-standing association with this body, was the recent request by our state economists for a mid-quarter meeting with the Joint Revenue Committees. And why? Because, as he related, the fourth quarter revenue collections for 2008 fell more precipitously than at any other time in the history of Oregon. Further, he projected that we will not return to the same level of total non-farm employment as experienced in the first quarter of 2008 until the second quarter of 2012. That is a long and deep recession. Now, Mr. President, parallels are often drawn between business and government. Sometimes there are distinctions worth noting, sometimes there are not. But I would share a parallel that I believe is worth noting. In my business career at various times in recessionary cycles, I spent many a sleepless night worrying about whether our business would be able to maintain the debt coverage ratios in our bank loan covenants. Would we be able to meet our current payables, our long-term payables? Could we service our bank debt? And now I'm in government, and I'm also spending a sleepless night here and there, more than I ever even imagined. But my restlessness has nothing to do with the risk that Oregon can't meet its debt obligations. We will. My restlessness has everything to do with the risk that Oregon will not meet its obligations to its most vulnerable citizens. Mr. President and colleagues, what will we tell our seniors and persons with disabilities? That we can't fund their desperate needs because we are paying debt on the lowest of priority maintenance projects for the next 20 years? What will we tell our most vulnerable clients in need of mental health treatment? That sealing cracks and replacing heat pumps and other funded agencies is more important than their well-being? By our actions today, we are telling those who literally lost their way in the governor's budget, namely our most vulnerable citizens, that the pursuit of temporary jobs with debt that will live with us for 15 years is more important than their needs. Colleagues, many of our most vulnerable citizens are in the twilight of their lives and have precious little options to make their lives whole. They depend on us. The debt service on this bill reduces our ability to fund their needs. Can we look them in the eye and say that we have done all we could do? Clearly, the risk is high for a deep and prolonged recession. And if that is so, prudence and caution should be our guide, lest we take away money from schools, human services, and public safety, those current obligations that we presently are not even funding adequately. The fourth principle. What is the total debt to be incurred this session? Has this been considered? In these, the most uncertain of times, to be asked to make a decision on borrowing $180 million this early in the session for maintenance projects without an understanding of the total amount to be borrowed at the end of session places legislative members in an untenable position. As a businessman, I know intuitively that increasing debt in the face of declining revenues is inherently risky, and no one doubts that revenues are continuing to decline. Further, debt is always used for the purpose of advancing the enterprise, and it is almost always used for those projects that either have the highest return or for which there is no other alternative. Job creation is a worthy ancillary of capital projects, but it should never be the primary purpose. We are not the federal government with the ability to deficit finance job creation. We do not have the luxury of the federal government to postpone the day of reckoning. Our day of reckoning is here today. It's here today, and it begins July 1, 2009. Simply put, hurry up bonding in this most treacherous economy, all for the purpose of increasing employment by 0.09%. Colleagues, and I choose these words carefully, it borders on nearly on the reckless. Incurring debt for jobs today may well be offset by the pain tomorrow of continued precipitous declines in revenue, when we just don't have the money to stay afloat, let alone to pay that debt obligation. At the close of session, when the May forecast is delivered, will we look back and wonder why we did this today? And Mr. President, with your indulgence, I move that Senate Bill 338 be re-referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senate Bill, Morris has moved that Senate Bill 338 be referred to the Ways and Means, current Ways and Means Committee. To your motion, please.
To the motion, Mr. President. I recognize that re-referral would be most unusual and likely unprecedented. However, these are not usual times. I am asking the body to weigh the risks of passing legislation of this magnitude at this point in time. I'm asking the body to weigh the value of obligating Oregon to $180 million in debt before we have any sense of what the next two revenue forecasts will bring. I'm asking that we consider waiting until the end of session to make capital bonding decisions and assure ourselves that we will make the best decisions possible, given the free-falling revenue we find today. I'm asking that we reconsider the appropriateness of bonding low-priority projects. Colleagues, if the 09-11 revenue forecast in May is down $2 billion, would this bill be the same then as it is now? And think, if the May forecast is down $3 billion and there is no possible way that we can keep our kids in school, care for our most vulnerable, keep prisoners in prison, would this be the same bill then as it is today? This, colleagues, is not a time for a procedural vote. It is a time for a thoughtful reconsideration. Thank you, Mr. President.
Recognize Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the motion.
To the motion.
Colleagues, you've heard the previous speaker refer to this as a procedural vote. A procedural vote may mean to some that you just don't have to think about it, that you're absolved of your responsibility to think about it. But I will say that this is your procedural opportunity to get engaged. This proposal before us to re-refer invites Democrats and Republicans to work together and engage on economic development, on job creation strategies that will work, that do have merit, that don't ask people to pay 20 years for moss removal. So you may believe, or you may have been told, that on a procedural vote, you just don't have to think. You just have to do. But I'm going to ask you to think about the invitation to engage that a yes vote on this motion will create for the Democrats as well as for the Republicans. This is a great place to restart our relationship. A yes vote would create the kind of conversation that we need to get through the worst economic challenge this state's ever known. And so, Mr. President, Republican colleagues, Democrat colleagues, let's take this back to committee and do it right. Thank you, Mr. President.
Recognize Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. President. The good senator from Corvallis, I think more eloquently than anyone else on the Senate floor, outlined the problems that we're facing as a state. Collaboration. Working together. In my previous comments on the floor, I mentioned President Obama and the process under which he has moved forward on a federal stimulus. I had the opportunity, Mr. President, last month to be a part of a five-member delegation of legislators to talk to the Obama transition team on their economic policy as part of the stimulus. At that point in time, the Congress was moving full speed ahead to have an economic stimulus bill on the President's desk for his signature on January 30th. Yet he stopped that process. He stopped that process so that he could be inclusive, that they could bring everybody to the table and collaborate. Colleagues, there is a lot of expertise on this Senate floor. We ought to do the best for Oregonians, put the very best product back on the Senate floor. We have an opportunity to do that. And I'd urge a yes vote on the motion, Mr. President.
Thank you. I've allowed some liberty on the discussion on the floor. The motion is to re-refer. This is not a motion to discuss the bill in general. We've been doing that prior to this motion. I have allowed some liberty on that, but I ask that you please remember that. Senator Cruz, please, to the motion to re-refer to the Joint Ways and Means Committee, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the motion to re-refer, colleagues, I think this is an appropriate motion at this time simply because of the fact that when I looked at this package, I could come up with some alternatives that I think would make some sense. If this bill is re-referred to Ways and Means, it would give the 90 members of this legislative assembly a chance to weigh in on the mix that is in this package, and I think it's appropriate. This is supposed to be a deliberative process. It's not a rush to judgment process. And by sending this bill back to Ways and Means, it gives us a chance to do the good sorts of deliberation that we should be doing, that we normally do in this body. So, colleagues, I urge an aye vote on something that is not procedural. This is actually significant.
Thank you. Is there further discussion on the motion to re-refer? Senator Morris, do you wish to close on your motion? He does not. Yeah. Without objection. Senator Farioli has moved for the call of the Senate. He is joined by Senator Devlin. The clerk will please read the call of the roll. The clerk will read the roll. Yes, the doorkeepers will bar the doors, and our sergeant-at-arms will attend. So, and please, would you call the roll?
Atkinson.
Yeah.
Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Right. Dingfelder. Farioli. George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney. All members present.
situation is here, we're voting on the motion to re-refer the member, the bill to the Joint Ways and Means Committee. The only reason I remind you of that is you sort of got to get used to what's coming here in terms of what a yes vote means and a no vote. There's no further discussion. If not, the question now arises on the re-referral of Senate Bill 338 to the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Those in favor will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Carter. Devlin. Dinkfelder. Farioli. George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Metzger. Mons Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. President Cording.
No.
Voting no. Bates, Bonamici, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Hass, Johnson, Metzger, Mons Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Berger, Walker, President Courtney. 12 ayes.
The motion has failed. The main bill is now before us. Further discussion on the main bill. Senator Carter, do you wish to close?
Colleagues, it is not my intention to come before you today to or this morning to try and sugarcoat the daunting circumstances that are aligned against us. For their proportion and the details have been the subject of an almost ceaseless stream of dire media reports. Rather, I would like to take this opportunity to remind us that it is from these times of challenge and uncertainty that we can become aware of a new sense possibility. A sense of possibility grounded in common purpose and a heightened understanding that as Oregonians, our mutual prosperity depends on our ability to embrace a functional unity as a state, as a people. So with this in mind today, we consider our effort to assist the thousands of our fellow citizens caught in this frightening whirlwind of events. And as you listen to the debate this morning, and as you have listened to the debate this morning, and as you will continue to talk about what went on the floor today, I simply ask you one thing, and that is don't let the perfect, become the enemy of the good. Of course not, we can't be perfect in this period of time because we never come into this body under these kind of circumstances. This is quite unusual. As I have talked to private economists, I have talked to public economists, and they each have said, Margaret, there is not a model. I talked to the banking community. There is not a model that is in this country today that can tell us how to get out of this mess that we're in. So it's about trial and error. It is also about putting food on the table of Oregonians who don't have it. This is about jobs. This is not about projects. Let me be very clear. This is not about consultants and presidents and doctors and lawyers because they have food on the table. This is about the little man who has no means of making it. And they are depending on you and me to do some unusual things. Yes, this is unusual.
Yes, it is a precedence, but it's a precedence to feed little children who are without milk, without warm and heat in their house. And you know what? I woke up in a warm house this morning. I had a nice robe to put on my back. But there are those who don't have that, and they can't wait until July to get something to eat. That's why this is before you today, because we needed project-ready jobs. We needed something that was going to put Oregonians back to work in a hurry. Now, some of us have been heard to complain that this package is too small, that after all, there are now some 180,000 Oregonians out of work, and this stimulus only represents 3,000 jobs. Again, I say to you, don't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. This may be a modest and partial remedy in relative terms, but it's a small piece in our collective efforts to solve a larger and more vexing puzzle that has happened to us as Americans, and more particularly Oregonians. But let it be understood, just as there isn't one clear and unequivocal source of our current problems, so there is not one magic solution. That's why this president in September called me and others in and said, let's work to do something. How can we put Oregonians back to work? Federal government can write dollars. We can't. So we thought bonding was the next best thing to do. Are we going out into the future? Yes, we are. Are we doing something new that is not... But you know what? I'd rather go out into the future and feed people today than for them to die hungry. That's what this is all about. It is about jobs. Let me be very clear. When families are cold and when they're hungry and without resources today, July is not going to work. We wanted shovel-ready projects again to get Oregonians back to work. Our food stamps requests are up by 18%. So do you do it here with dignity, or do you give more money to the Department of Human Services to feed Oregonians? I ask you that question. I ask you to ponder that. Casework loads are up by 20+%. Do we sit here and do nothing? In the words of Representative Jensen, I'd rather do something, try doing something right, than to do nothing and do it wrong. Today is the right thing to do. Unemployment in 5 states are the highest in the nation, and Oregon is one of them. We have an unemployment rate of 9%, colleagues. And you know what? Unprecedented. It went up by 1% in November and another percent in December, and it's back to the numbers of the 80s. I say, do we sit here and do nothing, or do we try hard to do something? And I want to say that we have unused capacity in our bond rating. Stimulating efforts and opportunity for those who are without, it appears to me, to be the way to go. We can certainly disagree on issues here today, whether they're projects, whether they're jobs, whether they're going to put food on the table, or whether they're not, whether this is the wrong way to get something done, but it is doing something that we hope would make a difference in the lives of Oregonians. So this bill today is about putting people back to work. Mr. President, with your permission, I'd like to read from a printed text. Thank you. This is a letter from our state treasurer, and he said, this is a critical moment for Oregon, and critical moments demand action. We can help create jobs in the short term and improve our state in the long term by authorizing smart investments. That's why I support Senate Bill 5562, and why I hope you will too. Oregon has a strong credit rating, and in this economic climate, we should leverage our financial advantages. We know that there is no single or simple answer to this economic crisis, but we know that creating and sustaining jobs for Oregonians will be an important part of the equation that moves us back toward prosperity. In the future, Oregon will reap benefits. And I want to just refer to some memorization items that I want to have most of you that have been here since 2001. Spending within bond limit does not put us at risk. And we have bonding information on my desk that will speak to that. And some people, yes, you refer to it as a boondoggle. But if feeding people and putting heat in a person's home is boondoggling, then by George, I want a lot of boondoggling. Federal law requires, because I know you referred to the Owen Project. Federal law requires through the FCC to deal with the Owen Project. To me, that's something we have to deal with in another issue. Airports, you cannot use COPs to bond anything outside of a state issue. The reason we're using F1s is because we have community colleges and community colleges involved here today. Number two, rush to judgment. Number three, rush to judgment in a household that has no food. Today is a matter of one's hunger. 2001, 2003, we begged and borrowed. And I want all of you that were here to remember. We begged, borrowed, and outright took every one-time dollar we could find. $425 million for operations, may I remind you. I want you to remember and remember well that we did it because we were in crisis, and we're in greater crisis today. This project was being worked during the interim. This president took sheets that many of you were on that committee with Senator Devlin, and you worked on these sheets. And Oregon legislature has not funded higher education in K-12 to the degree that which they can deal with deferred maintenance. There you have it. President Courtney has been talking about this approach since September. And today, I ask you to do that. That is good, because that is perfect, is yet to come. And many of you know that in moments of great import, such as this, I like to seek confirmation from a higher authority regarding the wisdom of our decisions, and today is no exception. So, colleagues, I would remind you of the concluding words of the parable contained in Matthew chapter 25.
Senator Carter, your time has expired, please. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. I ask you to support this measure.
Thank you. The question now arises. Upon the third reading, the final passage of Senate Bill 338. Those with the opinion that the bill should pass will say aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk, please call the roll.
Devlin. Devlin.
Aye.
Dinkfelder. Barioli.
No.
George.
No.
Gerard.
No.
Hass.
Aye.
Johnson.
Here.
Johnson.
Here.
Aye. Cruz. Metzger. Bonas Anderson. Monroe.
Aye.
Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. President Courtney.
Yes.
Voting no, Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Cruz, Morse, Starr, Telfer, Whitsett. 20 ayes.
The Senate Bill 338, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 5562, relating to State Financial Administration, declaring emergency.
Senator Carter, are you going to? Senator Nelson, I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 5562 provides the bonding authority needed for the economic stimulus projects contained in Senate Bill 338. The bill provides $1.9 million in new Article 11G bonds, $12 million in Article 11F bonds, $16 million in state energy loan bonds, and $56.3 million in certificates of participation for the Department of Higher Education projects. The bill authorizes $9.7 million in Article 11G and $49.1 million in lottery bonds for community colleges. Certificates of participation in the amount of $35.2 million fund the balance of the projects in the rest of the agencies. There are some of the amounts authorized in this bill may vary slightly from the amounts in Senate Bill 338 as they contain the amounts needed for projects plus any issuance costs, which we don't know at this particular time. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5562 as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Chair recognizes Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. We are asked now to raise the credit limit. We're overextended, in my opinion, economically, perhaps as much as $1 billion in this biennium. And our answer to that is to request from the body permission to increase our credit limit so that we may continue to spend on government projects. Mr. President, we had, in my opinion, some of the best, most well-reasoned discussion of any measure that may come before this body. And if those reasons that attended the last measure are insufficient to make us think twice about raising the limits so that we can continue spending on government projects, I don't know what else will matter to the members of this body. It will matter to Oregonians. I would simply invite all Oregonians to carefully weigh what they've heard here today and look at the principles on which we have cast our votes and use that as perhaps an indicator of how the rest of the session may roll out, Mr. President. And I hope Oregonians outside this building, after hearing the discussions that we've engaged in this process, bonding mediocre projects of questionable value and short-term benefit, using the mechanism of bond sales and creating long-term debt, I hope they will weigh in with their legislators and hold us accountable. I'll be voting no, Mr. President, and I urge those who believe in fiscal accountability to join me and vote no on raising the limit to spend more. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Chair recognizes Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I do not oppose prudent borrowing to build infrastructure that will help sustain Oregon's economy and Oregon jobs. But our ability to pay debt service is inversely proportional to our revenue stream. That revenue stream is uncertain at best. Current predictions are for less revenue for the next biennium than we had to start the 2007 biennium. And that downward spiral appears to be accelerating. We don't know where that spiral is going to end. The fact of the matter is, we have no idea how high unemployment is going to go. It seems to be in an inverse spiral going upward. And the employed people are our primary source of revenue in this state. Now is not the time to authorize more borrowing. We should wait until we have a better idea of the capacity to both repay our obligations and to provide critical needed services to our citizens. I was not here in 2003, and I won't judge what was necessary at that time. But what I do know is that the $421 million of appropriation bonds that were passed in 2003 are still being paid to the tune of more than $50 million a year. Colleagues, we could use that $50 million to help support OPI, to help support our foster care, and any number of other issues. But we don't have that money because we're obligated to pay it as a result of borrowing to run operations. This is not the appropriate time for this bill, Mr. President. For that reason, I will vote no, and I hope that you will join me in voting no. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Chair recognizes Senator Girard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll be brief. Once again, colleagues, I just want to point out that we're raising the debt ceiling here, and we're doing it to pay for two things. One, we're doing it to pay for a boondoggle that we had last session, and that is the Olin project for $270 million. And we're doing it for the last bill that we passed, which in my district is the removal of moss from roofs. In my district, and that's going to be amortized over 15 years, and that moss will return every 3 years, so we're going to bond for 5 different sessions of moss removal if we keep doing it this way. So that's $446 million worth of bonding that we could do for infrastructure for our small cities, of which we have a lot of mayors in the audience. That's something that we could do that would really encourage economic development and create true jobs. So I'll be voting no as well.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? If not, Senator and Senate President Courtney, would you like to close?
There has been a lot of discussion out here today, and remarks have been made that I will attempt to speak to in a short manner, because some of them have directly commented on my role in this. I want every member of the Senate to understand that I have been completely and totally involved in this project since day one. If you're upset or angry for the different reasons you have said, then be angry at Peter Michael Coleman Courtney, not another member of the state Senate. Back in September, when the economic forecast came down, we started to get in trouble, I started to get worried. And I watched some unemployment figures that got me worried. And I went to those people who are certified smart in these matters, and I said, I'm getting a bad feeling about the economy, about the way we work in Oregon, and about the people losing their jobs. And I think that perhaps we should look at some capital construction. And so we started down that road. I then became more alarmed as we moved into the forecast in November. And again, we were in trouble, getting worse. Some of your people, most outstanding staff in the country, visited me and said, Peter, we must talk to you. We must talk to you. The situation is so grave, someone needs to start to speak to it, at least in terms of a forecast that we will get in a few weeks. And the unemployment figures continue, getting worse and worse and worse. I said, you got to understand how I'm built. You must understand my philosophy about life. Years ago in the hills of West By God, Virginia, when I was a little boy, my father took me aside. He said, Peter, when a man or woman loses their job, you can break their spirit. You can ruin them. They will never recover. I have grown up to respect the value of work, not just to me and to my family and my obligation, but to every single individual. My father taught me to respect my fellow citizens with the view of work. So let's talk about statistics. Right the day after Martin Luther King, we heard that our employment statewide was 9%. Well, let's look at that statewide, since it's been referred to as carrots. In June, the unemployment figures for Grant County were 9.3. On Monday at 11 o'clock, it was 15.9%. In Cook County in June, it was 8.2%. At 11 o'clock on Monday, it was 14%. In June, it was 8.5% in Jefferson County. And 11 o'clock on Monday, it was 13.3%. In Deschutes, in June, it was 6.5%. At 11 o'clock on Monday, it was 11.3%. I could go on and on and on. And I said, we will create jobs. We will make jobs any way we can, any place we can in the state of Oregon. I said that. And they said, Peter, if you just go capital construction, you can't get there. You got to go deferred maintenance. I said, go. Go. I said that. Get me a list. I have one regret, that this isn't the list we're talking about. This list is the first list of over $500 million of projects. $500 million across this state. And you know why we're not doing that? Speaking of prudence, he said, Peter, we're not going to let you do that. You can't go with that amount of money right now. And you got to understand something. I was told by the Treasurer's office that in late January, there was a bond sale, and they would let us get on that bond sale to do something about jobs. 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 I would give anything if my dad was here today. He taught me everything about the value of work. My mother was too sick. Because we identify with our jobs so highly, unemployment is right up there with death and the divorce for a lot of us folks. We sit at our home sending out resumes that look like obituaries. Peter Pascal, a 28-year-old career consultant from Donaldson, who's lost his job. I really feel I've lost all hope. The only thing I can do now is try to keep my spirits up and just not let the kids see it. Heidi Harden, 40-year-old mother, too, from Portland. You see people lose faith in themselves. You lose your self-esteem. And once you have done that, it just makes everything harder. First, our job is a source of identity, and it gives us a sense of being productive. When we lose our job, we lose that. The other is just plain reality, the loss of security, the anxiety, et cetera, et cetera. It goes on. That's the face of unemployment in the state of Oregon. You need to know something. According to the Employment Department of the state of Oregon, our economy has lost 9,700 jobs in the month of December alone. December has 31 days, 24 hours a day, 744 hours in the month. That's 13 jobs lost every hour of every day in December. That's jobs lost. That means you're losing a job every 4 minutes and 36 seconds. According to the Employment Department, 33,026 initial claims for unemployment were filed in the first 2 weeks of January. 14 days, 24 hours in a day. 60 minutes an hour. That's 1.6 claims a minute. Since we have started this discussion on this floor today, keeping that, we are at 120 Oregonians have filed new claims for unemployment since we started the discussion here today. Yes, you're right. We are moving at flank speed. I am guilty of that. The Republicans got the list no sooner than Democrats. And that was true of the House. Flank speed. The legislature is not designed to move at flank speed. You're absolutely right in that. It is deliberative. It is slow. It is arduous. It is expensive. It is designed that way. But I will tell you something. As the most veteran member of the Oregon legislature, I have never seen anything like this. The legislature had to act this quickly to get on that bond sale. I'm not going to try to duel with any of you that are very good in accounting, very good in banking, very good in finance. I won't try to do that. But I'll tell you something. When I got this kind of crisis with my fellow Oregonians, I will do whatever. I will use government. I'll tell you something. I'll go to every pot I can got to get Oregonians to work right now. And that's what this project is going to do. Leave you with one last thought. I went to the doctor this morning. That makes some people actually happy. Got a little problem. Not serious. So the physician assistant called me and said, Peter, your blood pressure moved up. I said, well, I got a battle coming. So I gave a speech. I'm getting up. He says, you know, Peter, I've never seen anything like this. He said, what do you mean? He says, Peter, the patients that come in here are falling apart. The anxiety, the stress. It's like I've never seen, Peter. The man's in his 50s. He says, it's the economy. I've never seen anything like this. That was at 9:45, four blocks from here. And I said, well, I know. He says, you got a tough job. I said, well, we all got a tough job. He said, the last thing he said to me is, he was going out the door, and he went out first, and he turned and looked at me with my file. He said, Peter, give a good speech,
And Peter, give us some words of hope. Hope. Our people, we need H-O-P-E. You know what I tell people now when they say, how you doing? I got a job. I got a job. And everybody stops. And say, you're right. I got a job. This is about jobs. Now, it isn't perfect. It was rushed. You're right. I'll concede all that. But I'll tell you something. When it's all said and done, people filing claims as we speak down there at the unemployment office. Those quotes are from real Oregonians who are dying. The statistics are in every one of our counties, 36. And I said, we are going to do whatever it takes to put jobs in every one of those counties. I couldn't do it just with higher education. I had to go to 11 state agencies. And I do it again and again and again. Because in the end, it's about hope. It's about the respect and dignity of every human being and their ability to have a job so they can pay their bills and take care of their loved ones. I will accept all the criticism out here. I will accept all the blame. I'm only sorry the package is not bigger.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5562. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should be passed will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Dingfelder. Farioli. George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Cruz. Metzger.
Aye.
Montez Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. President Courtney. Voting no. Atkinson. Boquist. Farioli. George. Gerard. Cruz. Morse. Starr. Telfer. Whitsett. 20 ayes.
Senate Bill 5562, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Without objection, the remaining third reading bills on today's calendar will be moved to the Monday, February 2nd calendar. First reading of House measures. Second reading of House measures. Third reading of House measures. Other business of the Senate. In accordance with SR 8.403, committee referral list number 18 was distributed to the members January 26th, and number 19 was distributed January 27th. Referral list number 20 was distributed today. The referrals will be recorded in the journal and the status report. So ordered. A list of senators have been appointed to boards, commissions, and task forces, and it has been distributed to the chamber desks. The appointments will be recorded in the journal and status report. So ordered. Announcements. Chair recognizes Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, given the hour, caucus for the Democrats is canceled today. Watch your emails for a potential caucus tomorrow.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Finance and Revenue Committee will meet at 1:45 in our usual place. Thank you.
Are there further announcements? Senate Business and Transportation will meet at 1:30 so members can have their lunch. 1:30 today. If there are no further announcements and without objection, the Senate is adjourned until 11:15, Monday, February 2nd.